WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
My guest is actress Shirley MacLaine. She's well known for her roles in over 30 films, from her debut performance in Alfred Hitchcock's The Trouble with Harry, to her roles in Some Came Running, The Apartment, Sweet Charity, Being There, The Turning Point, and her Academy Award-winning performance in Terms of Endearment. Today, MacLaine is perhaps even better known for her spiritual beliefs, which she has presented in books, on television, and in workshops. She wrote and played herself in a TV miniseries based on her book Out on a Limb, which was about her spiritual search. Her new book tells about the making of that miniseries. It's titled It's All in the Playing, and it's just been published by Bantam Books. Shirley MacLaine, welcome to Fresh Air.
Thank you.
Are you getting a lot of scripts now from movie producers with roles for psychics and spiritual questers?
Mm-hmm. And most of the scripts are not very good because, you know, to make a metaphysical script work, you have to have the involvement of the characters in something the audience can identify with, like someone's personal search or someone wants to contact a dead relative and the way to do it would be thus and such. And so the audience can identify with the pursuit and it has a first, second, and third act. Most of those scripts are very esoteric and what we'd call expositionary in terms of the material. So they're not involving. They're not dramatic.
Are there any scripts that you think you're not getting sent because of your spiritual beliefs?
Oh, no. Oh, no, Terry. The opposite.
So I was wondering if any producers might think, well, she's too identified with flaky religious beliefs and we won't send her this.
No, I think it would be the opposite. They think I've inherited a new audience. I mean, there's people out there buying my books and stuff that don't even know I'm a movie star. And I find that fascinating. I noticed that when I was doing my one-woman show, I inherited so many young people who had no idea that I had been in films. They had read my books and then wanted to see me on the stage.
Are you going to keep acting?
Oh, yes. I'm doing a picture now.
What's the movie?
It's called Madame Suzatska. It's for John Schlesinger. And I'm in it with Peggy Ashcroft, and Twiggy plays a young girl in it. It's a very epic character. It's kind of a small picture, somewhere between Room with a View and Terms of Endearment, somewhere right in the middle there. Well, I love the part. It's the first part that I've loved enough to commit myself to play in. Since I made Terms of Endearment.
Is that why you haven't done more movies recently? Yeah. Because you haven't liked the roles?
I've liked the parts, but I haven't liked the movies. And I like to be in a movie that means something, or at least explore some kind of humanity.
Since deciding to go public about your spiritual beliefs in reincarnation and trans-channeling and out-of-body experiences, you've become something of a guru. In your own right, a lot of people attend your workshops and, mm-hmm. and are reading your books about spirituality. And I wonder if you think that there are certain hazards in that. And let me explain. Mm-hmm. Here's what I'm thinking. People so much want to be like the celebrities that they admire and to be close with them. There's lifestyles of the rich and famous. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if there's becoming a spiritual equivalent, spirituality of the rich and famous, in which people seek out a certain spirituality because they're favorite celebrity is following it?
Oh, that's a different question than what do I think of this perception that I'm a guru? Well, anyway, there's two separate questions there. The one, I'm not comfortable myself with being a person who is a guide for someone else's own developing spirituality. They're their own best guide. Maybe I'm a catalyst. Maybe I just sort of strike the flint and light a little spark, and then they light their own way. Whether because I'm a celebrity, I would think it would work in the opposite direction. It took a long time to earn this. Because I was a celebrity, I think people at first wondered, well, what does this mean? Because this is a very profound subject, and perhaps because I went so far out on a limb, so to speak, and risked my entire 30-year career, put it on the line, and nothing really happened to me. But they saw me do it, and they saw me stick with it, and they saw me not only not back off, but go further out on the limb. I think maybe I earned my spiritual stripes, but I don't think that's got anything to do with being a celebrity, except insofar as I did risk my entire career and nothing bad happened to me. So if nothing bad happened to me, nothing bad would happen to someone else, presumably, who would also expose themselves in public.
I guess it was a risk for you to go public, and I'm sure a lot of people urged you not to do it. Mm-hmm. But even early in your career, you had a reputation for being kooky. That's the word that was always used, mm-hmm. kooky to describe you, or mm-hmm. impish, elfish. What did you do to earn that reputation early in your career?
Oh, you know, if the studio would say, we think you should go, because I was one of the last contract players, we think you should go to a premiere with such and such a man and get out of the car, and if they make gossip about it, that's fine, it would help the picture. I said, well, wait a minute, I don't want to do that. And besides, I don't even want to see this movie that I just made. I would do things like go to the premiere by myself, sneak in, change my clothes, and leave. Something like that would make me kooky. I was independent. I was living my life the way I saw it to be led. I was never a follower. I didn't believe in the phony sort of tinsel panache that they thought would engender people to be interested in me. I wasn't interested in them if that was what I had to do. And that earned me the reputation of being, I think, just unorthodox is really what it is.
Was there a studio publicist who resisted you every step of the way?
No. No, I did notice early on that as long as I was very strong and very centered about the fact that I wasn't going to participate in that kind of stuff, people are sensitive to that, and then they don't suggest it anymore. That, you know, I always used to think something was wrong with me that nobody ever tried to put me on a casting couch. I thought maybe I wasn't attractive. But nobody ever did. And it was because I never expected it. It was because it just didn't occur to me that they were going to.
It's interesting. You think you give off whether you're available or not.
Exactly. And they knew I was definite. No man likes to be humiliated, particularly in front of his secretary, so they didn't even try.
You started off your career in Chorus Lines on Broadway. Did you ever get to the point of feeling, I just want out, I've had enough of the Chorus Line?
Yeah. That was what was going on the very night that Carol Haney twisted her ankle and I went home. Well, she twisted it in the afternoon performance. I didn't think it was that bad an injury. I went home and in between, I discussed with my husband, I'm going to turn in my notice and I'm going to turn it in tonight because that woman will go on with a broken neck. And what am I doing in the chorus? I've been offered the understudy for Gwen Verdon in Can Can, and I had my notice in my pocket to turn into Hal Prince and Bob Fosse when I arrived at the theater that night, and they said Haney was out and I was on.
It's a real 42nd Street
Isn't
kind
amazing?
Of story. And that's how you first became noticed, starring in Pajama Game, replacing Carol Haney.
Mm-hmm.
The first movie role you had was in The Trouble with Harry, and you were directed by Alfred Hitchcock. And to have your movie debut be directed by such an important
director who didn't even like actors, that was the interesting part.
Well, I've heard that, but I'm not really sure what that means. Did you feel he didn't like actors when you worked with him?
Oh, he thought we were irrelevant. Oh, absolutely. He was very nice, but he was more interested in where he could take us to lunch to try the newest creme fraiche or something like that. What was important to him was the script in the first preview. What went on the soundstage was irrelevant. And by the way, he had it all up on a board. You could see any of Hitch's pictures by just looking at the pictures he had on a board, the still shots, the drawings. The cameraman knew exactly what was going to happen. The crew knew what was going to happen. As long as we just didn't bump into the furniture and said the right lines, it didn't matter because the script was it.
Does this mean he didn't give you any advice on your performance?
Well, let me tell you the advice that he used to give me. He never said a word in terms of good acting, but he walked up to me, actually, on the first day and said, now, before you say that word, dog's feet, and I didn't know that this was Cockney slang, would you know what to do if someone said, before you say that word, dog's feet? What are dog's feet?
Besides the feet of dogs, I have no idea.
They're paws. So he said, before you say that word, paws.
That's pretty cryptic.
Rather cryptic. And, you know, I was floundering around in my dancer's naivete wondering, is this what great acting is all about, trying to figure out Cockney slang? He got kind of a very mischievous, almost bordering on sadistic kick out of it.
In one of your books, you wrote that you gained 25 pounds during the making of the movie. Mm-hmm. I'd seen the movie. I saw it 3 years ago or something. I don't remember noticing that.
Because I'm very big. You know, I'm 5'7". And when I gain weight, I gain it equally. So I just, you don't see where it goes. But, you know, there's a little something different about me. I come plowing into a room instead of gracefully walking into a room when I've gained that much weight. But you wouldn't see me fat. You would just see me substantially different.
You were trained as a dancer and started off in Broadway musicals. Were you glad when your first movie was a comedy drama as opposed to a musical? Did you want to get out of musicals?
No, I loved musicals. I never even thought of Hollywood. I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't know how to act. I knew how to dance and a little bit how to sing, but I was basically a dancer. I didn't even have time to think when it all happened.
My guest is actress Shirley MacLaine, who has, by the way, just written a book based on the making of, it's about the making of her TV miniseries Out on a Limb, and the book is called It's All in the Playing. Another early one of your movies, Some Came Running, it's a really interesting film. I saw it for the first time just a few months ago on television, and you star in it with Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin. Mm-hmm. And it's directed by Vincent Minnelli, who mostly directed musicals in his career. So here you are, a woman with two of the big men in the Rat Pack. Mm-hmm. And this is, I think, the early days.
It was actually the Klan.
It was the Klan then?
Humphrey Bogart and those fellows were the Rat Pack. The Klan was another group. Oh, boy.
Well, what was it like being the woman with Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin when you were off the set?
Well, I was the one that they liked my talent, I think, and they were protective. I mean, a man would not have been able to come on to me if I had wanted him to, because they were there sort of as the bulwark for my virginity or something. They taught me little tricks about comedy on the stage, and we would go to Las Vegas, and they'd put me up on the stage and teach me things, and then I would try them out, and they would work. I remember when the script to Some Came Running came through, and Dave, the character that Frank plays in the Jimmy Jones original book, is the one who got shot. But Frank said, no, I want this kid to get nominated. We got to kill her, not me. You know, very generous about his shrewdness in how to throw the sympathy to the character that would best benefit for it. It was like that. It was an appreciation of professional talent. And I was sort of a mascot. I would bring them chocolates and flowers and just be around like a pet is sort of what I was.
Your character is shot in the movie, as you just mentioned. Was that the first time that you had to
die
in a film?
Yeah.
Did that take an emotional toll at all?
No. My God, I was just trying to find my mark and not turn my ankle. and to the scene that followed that, when Frank had to do some kind of acting over my body, it was hard for me not to breathe. It's hard for me not to laugh.
So no big emotional thing there?
No.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Shirley MacLaine is my guest, and a little later we're going to talk about her spiritual beliefs. She's written a book based on the making of her miniseries, Out on a Limb, and the book is called It's All in the Playing. And we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in a few seconds. This is Fresh Air. Shirley MacLaine is my guest. You once wrote that when you became a star, you realized you had power, and once you realized you had power, you had to figure out what was the right way to use it?
Mm-hmm.
What should you do with it? So what are some of the things when you had that realization that you decided to do with the power you had?
At the same time that I had that realization, I think I was developing my social consciousness, and it really ticked me off that people would abuse the power they had. So it sort of dovetailed with my own developing recognizance of my own power. I was always interested in being professional. I think I came out of the womb being professional. Of course, I'm a dancer, so I'm very disciplined about that. That's the only power I liked to insist on, was insisting that other people try to live up to their own capacity for professionalism. But I guess as I started to travel, my my compassion for the underdog developed, and my questions about human injustice became more and more profound. And as a result of the socio-political realizations I had in traveling and in my work with the feminist movement and some of the political candidates that I worked for, I think is, I'm probably taking too quantum a leap here, but I began to examine my own values more and more thoroughly until I came to the big question, why is all of this happening? And that's what got me into the spiritual search.
You made the movie based on your book, Out on a Limb, mm-hmm. about your spiritual search. And you shot some of it in Peru. An interesting thing happened in Peru that you describe in your book, which is that the Peruvians in the cast weren't getting any food this part. They weren't getting free food along with the rest of the American cast, I guess because they were officially extras. And you complained and said, how can we be making a movie about spiritualism and be treating people like we're the ugly Americans? Mm-hmm. This seems to be happening a lot in movies that are set in third world countries now.
Yeah.
This kind of problem.
Yes, on the other hand, I've been hearing these horror stories filter back from Donald Sutherland's picture in China on Bethune, where the crew doesn't have any food, and the actors don't have any food, and the stars don't have any food, and Donald himself lost like 35 pounds. And I don't know why it's all happening. I mean, that's where you really come to a question of, let's have some explanations here.
You played yourself in the movie Out on a Limb, which is perhaps your strangest role, playing yourself. And you've written that life was becoming like a play to me. Mm-hmm. Was it hard to play yourself? Because you weren't just being you. You had to act there.
Yeah. I liked the character, number one. And I knew her. I knew how she thinks and how she moves and how she acts. And real knowledge of a character is what occurs in between the lines that are written in the script. So I was very conversant with her. Now, I say her because I was playing me 10 years ago, which is equivalent to another her. I mean, I'm not like that anymore. Part of it was difficult because there's some things that in my skepticism I had to act out, and I could feel the audience see me acting. Because they knew that I was no longer that skeptical, but in the beginning I was. That was difficult.
In acting yourself, I don't know. I want to get to an episode that you talk about in the movie that I don't know what to make of. You're in. This is your role as the movie maker too. You're in Machu Picchu, which is in Peru.
Right.
It's in one of the ancient ruins where mm-hmm. where you're shooting, and everything's almost done with the movie. But you have a few shots to make, and you want to take some stills also there.
Have a whole day of shooting. Yeah.
Okay. And it's gonna rain. Mm-hmm. You feel like it's
it
gonna
is
rain.
Raining.
Okay. But mm-hmm. but you can't allow it to rain because it's gonna ruin the shooting. Mm-hmm. So you use all of your energy to hold back the rain.
No, what happened was I went to a bruja. The Peruvians said, you've come in the rainy season. It's going to cost you a lot of money. You have to ask the gods of the Andes if they will allow sun to shine in the rainy season at Machu Picchu, and we'll find you a bruja. That's what they call them. So this spiritual guide, Andean bruja, came into my trailer, and we did a session where he contacted the gods, he claimed, and got permission. And those Andean protectors and gods got in touch with my guides and said, all right, we will allow it to be sunny if you contribute to the visualization of the sun. And so they gave me a whole ceremony to do, which was to face the east and imagine the kind of weather I wanted. Now, it wasn't just me. It was me and Stan Margulies, the producer, and my assistant and another woman who was responsible for my meeting the Bruja. And it was absolutely raining cats and dogs, as they say, when we arrived in Machu Picchu. And the crew thought, because this is the second time we had tried to get it, and they thought, this is never going to happen. To make a long story short, I climbed up the steps with the other three. We went into a visualization in the middle of the rain and burned the twigs and did all the things that he told us to do. And within about 2 hours, the clouds had cleared, and the shot that we got, the light that we got, was not flat sunlight, but the kind of sunlight we actually visualized, which was third dimensional, so that you could see clouds and filtering through light and beautiful shadows. It was an extraordinary experience. Now, I don't know, maybe it's coincidence, but as I describe it in the book, of course, it's much more complicated, and the toll that it took on me in terms of the exertion of the kind of visualization energy, it was hard, and I got sick.
From the energy that you used to make it stop raining.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some people who are skeptics think that your popularizing of out-of-body experiences and trans-channeling are trivializing spirituality by making it into a kind of fairy tale type of thing where one person can have the energy to accomplish magical things, where miracles can be performed on a daily basis.
But everybody can. That's the whole point, is to popularize it so that you can see you can do it too. That's the whole point. It's not exclusive or elitist. I mean, this is what Jesus said too. You will do what I have done and greater. So the popularization of spirituality is indeed the whole point. Become a spiritual being. Use your positive power. Use your positive approach to loving yourself. Improve your life and the life of others.
The people who are trying to emulate your particular kind of spirituality don't have one advantage that you do, which is the kind of mobility and money that you have. In other words, so that you could travel to see an acupuncturist and a trans channeler and all the different religious and spiritual specialists that you have.
That doesn't cost much money. Besides, most people say that, well, you just drive 2 hours to some place. Mm-hmm. They're all over the place. Most people feel that to find this kind of spirituality, you need to give up everything. It's the opposite. Down through the ages, to take a vow of poverty is to find enlightenment. That's usually what people think. So to say, well, I could do it because I had money, as a matter of fact, it's become more complicated. But that's all right, because, you know, to analyze the role that money and materialism plays in one's own spiritual search is very fascinating. Like with my seminars, I would much prefer to have done those seminars for nothing. But if I threw the doors open to, and there wasn't any, but it's like the same theory with anything. Everybody would have come just to see a movie star, and I wanted people who were really committed and serious students of these metaphysical techniques. So I was on the low end of the scale in terms of what weekend seminars go for, and then, of course, I'm going to spend all the money on my spiritual center.
Do you find that in movies that you make now that there are different people in different religious camps? I was reading about when you were making Terms of Endearment, for instance, and I guess you were involved in the beginnings of your spiritual quest, and Deborah Winger was into Gurdjieff. Mm-hmm. I'm just imagining that behind the scenes, everybody's got their own personal thing going.
Yeah, I think so. And everyone has their own thread to unravel, because everybody has a different ball of wax. Sure, everybody's reality is different, yeah.
Let's talk about acting a little more. When you're acting with someone who has a different way of getting into the role that you do, does that cause conflicts on screen or off screen? For instance, some people like to follow through on a role off screen and remain almost in persona, and other people think that that's ridiculous to do, and that when the camera stops, you're not in the role anymore.
Well, that's up to them, as long as they don't knock on my door at 4 o'clock in the morning playing the part that they're playing in the movie. If they want to keep in character all night long, 24 hours a day, fine. I might do that in the next film I'm making, this one I just described with Schlesinger. I might do that because I love this character, and she's so epic And I think the environment in which we're going to shoot this will be positive enough for me to try it. I've never really done that. I'm one of those kind of professional, stable people who after 6 o'clock says, okay, that's it, I'm going home to my personal life. But I might try being Suzatsuka 24 hours a day. I'd like to try that, because it's all going to happen in London, where I'm away from my own home, local environmental stimuli, and I might just do it. I'm looking forward to trying that. And if I like it, by the way, then I'll write about that.
Do you still treat your body like a dancer's body?
Yeah, I do my yoga every day. And I am still addicted to food, like all dancers. I still...
You get addicted because you have to starve yourself.
No, right, it's some other psychological trip that we do on ourselves. It's got to do with we would love to be thin. Audrey Hepburn is fat in terms of what we'd like to be. And yet at the same time, we are totally hung up on junk food. I just love junk food. Well, when I say junk food, I don't go and eat hamburgers and have shakes, but a hot fudge sundae or sweets, I'm very, very involved with. I mean, I'm trying to work that out, but it's still a problem for me.
You turned 50, I believe, not too long ago?
No, 53.
53, mm-hmm. Okay. Are you comfortable about aging, and are you comfortable about getting older in front of the camera? And we only have a few seconds left here.
That's why I love this character I'm playing. She has to look like an old 55, and I don't have to worry. It's just a wonderful feeling.
So you're glad to look, to be able to look your age or even a little older on camera instead of having to cover.
No, I'm looking forward to that. And the woman I'm going to play after this is 79.
Really? Well, that'll be a stretch.
I've made a leap into character acting now.
Shirley MacLaine, I want to thank you very much for being here. Thanks for talking with us.
Thank you.
My guest has been actress Shirley MacLaine, and she's written a new book about the making of the miniseries Out on a Limb, and the new book is called It's All in the Playing. It's published by Bantam Books. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.